Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Friday, November the 26th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, what films have you been watching lately, particularly as we get now into the start of the holiday season in 2021? Christmas, holidays, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, post-Thanksgiving here in the US. And as we get into the holidays and we get into the winter, which is going to be starting in a few weeks' time, what films have you been watching? Obviously, many of you, I suspect, are watching from the comfort of your own homes and not in movie theaters. But if you are, whether you're watching in movie theaters or not, what films have you been watching? That is the topic on this edition of The Politocrat, coming up next. Dear listener, welcome back, and thank you very much indeed for your listening ear on this post-Thanksgiving Day edition of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. It is Friday, November the 26th, 2021, and again, I thank you very much indeed for lending your ear to the Politocrat Daily Podcast. Really do thank you, and I can't thank you enough, actually, so I just want to say thank you again, and I want to say I appreciate you, I respect you, and I hope you are well in this day and age. I hope that you and yours are faring well and that you are moving in the direction that you would like to travel in and that you are fairly content given everything that we're going through in this planet, on this planet and in this world. I hope that you are at peace with yourself to a certain degree. I don't think we can ever be be at 100% peace, I suppose. Even in a turbulent world like this, dear listener, I think that we can manage. To some degree, we can't control everything. We can only control what we do. And we can only control what we put out there in the world. And I hope that what you put out there is something positive and energetic and inspiring and also life-affirming as well and enriching and loving. And so this is what the mission must be for each and every one of us on a daily basis. This is what we must do. We must cultivate an era and a movement and a behavior that spells compassion. C-O-M-P-A-S-S-I-O-N. We have to have compassion. We have to have empathy. And the ability to put oneself in another's shoes. These are two things that I do talk about. I think I should talk about them a bit more often than I have lately. But I just wanted to say that here as we get to the day after the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States. And with that, I do wish you a very good weekend. Welcome to it here as we are on a Friday. And, you know, the thing that I want to turn to is a change of pace for this episode. You know, I believe in a change of pace sometimes, dear listener, because we've got to have a little different thing occasionally to be talked about on this podcast. And every now and again, I think I come through with that kind of a mission. May not be the way it always should be, but I think this is a good opportunity to talk about what kind of entertainment have you been watching. I know we love to watch, don't we? We love to watch and keep ourselves entertained. I mean, some of us read books, of course. Some of us listen to music, which is another wonderful thing, music. And some of us like to take a walk. I mean, we can do all of these things, of course. It doesn't have to be just one of each or one thing. It can be all of those things. But there are different kinds of things we like to do, you know. And I know winter's here. It's coming. Winter is coming, as they say on a certain TV series. I just want to know, though, what in terms of film? Now, I'm sure that you've been watching television or at least watching it on your iPad or on your phone or whatever you choose to do. Streaming platforms, of course, are the thing now. I mean, it's all streaming, isn't it? I mean, even Blu-ray, as much as I love Blu-ray, it's not the go-to anymore for most people in the United States. And I dare say it's not the go-to for most people on the planet who are fortunate enough to even have streaming services and online services. But, you know, or maybe not fortunate, because I think the thing with streaming services, dear listeners, there's too much choice, isn't there? too much. You get overwhelmed and then you end up watching nothing because you've got so much to choose from to watch. And then you, I don't know, I just find I don't watch the most satisfying thing on television or on a streaming service. And, you know, Netflix and I have a really twisted relationship. I think if you follow me on Twitter at the Popcorn REEL, dear listener, you would understand what I meant by that comment, because Netflix, I must confess, they have been trying to seduce me lately. How dare they? Oh, dear. All the things. And again, I go back to Dave Chappelle. And look, I know people aren't going to be that rigid on things. We are not as honest with ourselves as we think we are. And the majority of people, I posed this a few weeks ago, when hearing about Dave Chappelle and the anti-gay jokes and the anti-trans jokes, so-called jokes, because they're not jokes at all, in my view. When hearing about that, I think people maybe expressed some disgust with it, but that didn't stop most of those people who may have expressed disgust from quitting Netflix. I'll bet you they all still watched Netflix. Perhaps you did as well, dear listener. I don't know. People aren't going to draw the line at some things. They're not. I want my MTV. It's that kind of mentality. Get your money for nothing and get your kicks for free, said Dire Straits one time. And Sting, by the way, was the one that said, I want my MTV. Did you know that? That was Sting. I'm sure some of you knew that, dear listener. I'm sure you did. That in the backing vocal of Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, back in, was that 1982 or 83 that song came out? That it's Sting of the Police. Sting, who shouts out, I want my MTV. Okay, I'll stop now. I'll stop, dear listener. I apologize. I don't want to blow out your eardrums. It is Friday, by the way. So may the blowing of eardrums commence. Commence. O festival. Ah, you've got to forgive me, dear listener. This is it's good to just get to the weekend, you know? Are you all out there shopping for Black Friday or White Friday, as I call it? Are you out there shopping for that now? Oh my gosh, it's got to be a madhouse out there. I don't know how you do it. Probably, I think you'd probably be better off doing this online, don't you think? I mean, you don't have hordes of people to deal with, you know? Jeez. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. That's not what my focus is. My focus is, to get back to it, is what about your film watching? Are you going to the movie theater in the midst of a pandemic? Even though some of you, I am sure, are having your booster shot. And I know, dear listener, that if you haven't, you need to go get one. You really need to go and get this booster shot. It will offer you a good few more months, if I can say that correctly, of protection and stronger protection. It's a buttressing to the previous two shots that you had. If you're fully vaccinated, you know what I'm talking about. If you took the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, you know what I'm talking about. Right? So then you've had two shots, you're fully vaccinated, and you are supposed to take the booster shot 6 months after your last vaccination. So that would be, for those of you who've taken Pfizer or Moderna, that means 6 months after that second shot, you should be getting your booster shot. Now, look, I really would like it to be everyone be eligible, because here in California, everyone is eligible. And anyone from, I think, 12 years old and up, or whatever years old and up, is eligible for a booster shot. And I think this may be true across the United States. But the thing is, I just think everybody should just get it at all at the same time. There should not be preferential treatment. I mean, yeah, for the elderly and for people with serious conditions, perhaps. But I think this should be available, really, really, to everyone at once. That's what I feel, dear listener. That's what I think. But I want to get back to this thing about film. About film. You're not going to the movie theater, are you? Surely you're not. Are you, dear listener? Really? I mean, I know some people are. But if you are, be careful. You don't want to catch this darn virus. You really don't. I'm convinced you don't want to catch the darn thing. Maybe you've already caught it, dear listener, and now you're just trying to get out from under. But all I can tell you is you do not want this virus, just based on the fact that people I know who have it, and there are a good few of them that I know who do, you don't want this thing. You don't want this thing. You don't want this. You really don't want this. So, whether you are going to a movie theater or not, please make sure you have a mask on, and please make sure you're fully vaccinated. Please. But if you are in the comfort of your own home, and I think that's a smarter thing to do these days, given everything we know about the virus, the COVID-19 virus and disease, and how it really, this virus really spreads in this time of year. But I want to know, with all these streaming platforms, what films are you watching? There's so many films that have come out. Oh my God. And as a film critic, which is one of the things I do, I get a barrage of these things, which kind of goes back to my Netflix is seducing me comment. I get a barrage of these films. I'm a member of the San Francisco Film Critics Association here, Film Critics Circle, or I think it's now called the San Francisco Bay Area Film Critics Association. And you get inundated with films, and you have to watch all these things before you get to vote on them. And good grief, there's a lot to watch. Some of the stuff has not been very good. I don't want to start dropping names of movies, but at least not until I do my 10 best list that's coming up sometime next month before the year is out. But some of these films are absolutely god-awful. And I do really want to wonder, I want to ask rather, what films have you been seeing that you have liked, that you haven't liked? What movies have you been seeing that have tickled your fancy? The films that you've said, oh no, I can't finish the rest of this, I'm switching this off, and you just switch it off. You can't do that in a movie theater, mind you. I mean, the only way you can switch it off from a movie theater is by walking out. And by then, you're probably not going to get your money back, most likely, right? But the point is, dear listener, is what movies have you been seeing that have tickled your fancy over the last few days? Now that we're into the holiday season, officially now, what movies have you been watching? Have you been watching movies? But if you have been watching films of any kind, which ones have been tickling your fancy? Has it been documentaries? Has it been comedies? Has it been drama, psychological thrillers? Has it been horror? Has it been romance? Has it been, you know, action films, sci-fi films? What is it that is out now that you find tickling your fancy? There's a lot of things out. I'll actually drop some names of films that are currently out. There are films out there like Dune, D-U-N-E, which I believe is already out, and King Richard, which is already out. I think both of them are available to stream right now on a certain platform that begins with HBO. and there are others that are out. Those are two that I can think of. And there's a whole lot more coming. Between now and the end of this calendar year, there are going to be about 100 movies released. I'd say probably even 150. 150. So literally now, we are talking about in the last 4.5 weeks or so. Inside the last 5 weeks of this year, at least 150 movies will be released, which is, I think, except for the summer, the most amount of movies in the shortest period of time. In fact, I think this period of time, these next 4.5 to 5 weeks, will be the period with the most releases, theatrical or otherwise, being put out here in the United States. I mean, I don't think there's any other period of time, maybe the summer, where you have this many films released in this short a period of time. And I would say the summer actually is second, because those releases stretch out more over about 3.5 months than they do 3 or 4 months, actually, than they do 4 or 5 weeks. So you've got all the Academy Award contenders, all those films vying for Oscar nominations. You've got all the films vying for all kinds of other nominations, Golden Globes, those are nominations will be announced soon, the Golden Globes. The Screen Actors Guild nominations will be announced very soon. You'll have, you know, the People's Choice, and you'll have the Independent Spirit Awards and nominees. So there's a lot of stuff going on the awards season end in the film. And so there's a whole lot that film critics, including myself, get to watch or not, because there's so many movies. The stuff that comes in, phew, good grief. Some of the stuff is good, but as I say, a lot of it is not. And you just watch the first 15, 20 minutes and you go, ugh. Or you just brave it. You brave it. You kick it. You kick through it. You know, you just go, okay, I'll hold on and watch the rest of this miserable ass movie for the next hour and 40 minutes. And let's see if there's any redeeming value. And usually the survey says no. It says no. The survey says no on any redeeming value of these kinds of movies, because some of this stuff is absolute dreck. And you wonder why Hollywood studios, well, you don't. It depends on who the filmmaker is, so maybe you don't wonder too much. You wonder how these folks got budgets for this stuff. And then there are people who are so talented who never really get to see the light of day, or they get short shrifted by the same studio that just gave some schmuck, you know, $275 million to make some piece of garbage that may make a lot of money the first week, but then dies very quickly after that when people realize, oh, the first weekend, it was for curiosity's sake that people turned out for the movie. And then the next weekends, it was because word of mouth got out that it sucked. And so people then stayed away from the theater. And then by the week number four, the film is already out of 50% of the movie theaters, because especially this time of year, these films that come out, wave after wave of them, they cannibalize screens. And so screens are at a premium. And especially when you've got movie theaters that aren't fully opened yet in some cases. And, you know, it's life or death after week number one. And if you don't get a good start to your box office as a movie, you are done. Unless you're platforming the movie to a few places, then you platform it to another few places, and then in January you expand it into about 600-700 screens. You know, this is just the way the movie business has been now for the last 25 years at least, even more, where you have to get a good start. Most of the, between a quarter and a third of a film's total earnings are made in weekend number one. And that means you've got to have a big weekend number one, because if you don't, you're probably not going to survive a full calendar month, because you will be cannibalized, and whether it's in the summer or whether it's in the winter. So anywho, I have just rattled off a couple of films, and there's more coming. There's a lot of stuff that's out, that's been out, that you're going to hear a lot about during award season. I'm not going to go into all of them or even most of them. I've mentioned a couple of films that are out that I am not saying whether or not I think those are even awards contenders. I just don't want to poison that well for you. But I just really am doing this episode, A, as a change of pace, and B, to ask you, you know, what are the kinds of movies that you're watching? What are you being entertained by? And I know there's TV, and I know there's books, and there's music, and there's this, and there's that. But what are you being entertained by film-wise that you are watching during these days of the holiday season that are here now? You know, holiday season's here. And when you're not returning gifts, or when you're not shopping for White Friday deals, or when you're not looking at Cyber Monday, which is coming up in a few days' time, if you're not looking, what are you doing with the films and the streaming, yeah, you might be screaming, streaming platform. Which movies are you watching? I mean, there's so many out there. So that is the thrust and the crux of this particular episode. And by the way, you can drop me a line if you wish, dear listener. You can at politocratpod, politocratpod, @gmail.com. Drop me a line and let me know. What films have you watched in this holiday season, these last few days, this last day or two? And what films have you liked that you've seen over the last few weeks, actually? What is it that tickles your fancy? And it could be anything. It doesn't have to be something that was released in 2021 to a streaming platform or to a big screen. It could just be something you've seen on a channel that you watch. It could be here in the United States, for example, we have Turner Classic We have Turner Classic Movies, TCM. And Turner Classic Movies features robustly brilliant films. Not all of them, But I'd say about 65% of what you see on TCM is actually very good, high quality, maybe even 70%. But there are some clankers on and clunkers on TCM as well. But whether it's TCM in the US or whether it is some other streaming platform, wherever you might be, Sky Movies in the UK or wherever, whatever the platform is, all around the world, across the world that you may be watching films from, which films have you seen that you really like and which ones not so much? I'll talk more about this right after this. Nina Simone there with Young, Gifted, and Black. Welcome back, dear listener, and welcome to this brand new edition of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. I'm Omar Moore, and you are a valued and respected listener. Thank you very much indeed for your ear on this Friday, November the 26th, 2021, or whenever you happen to be listening to this particular episode of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. And I want to just say, before I get back to the subject of film, as we go through another day, the post-Thanksgiving, which is called Black Friday here in the United States and in other countries, I call it White Friday, because they're pretty much because many of the multi-billion dollar corporations that will be getting your money over the next day or so, this day and maybe other days beyond, are, you know, white owned and they are raking in money. So it's definitely White Friday. And look, I know what the story is behind Black Friday and why it's called Black Friday. And I think if you are a student of history, you will, I think, have an inkling as to why that is. I've talked about this before. I'll talk about it again at some point. But I just don't want to do that now. I might talk about it on Monday when we have Cyber Monday here. And Cyber Monday is not just here in the US, it's everywhere. And so that's all online. For those of you who have online access, because a lot of people do not have internet access around the world, most people don't. So it's perhaps not easy or not, you know, it's difficult for some people to recognize that because you're immersed here in the United States and other Western countries with internet, you're immersed with computer, but you know, there's lots of people who don't have any of those things. And it's not necessarily a bad thing that they don't. Because they have books, they have certain things, I think. And sometimes people don't have those either. On the African continent, there are lots of kids going to school who do not have books, who do need donations for books. That's why you have organizations who, you know, with the donations that people give, provide the monies for books and for education for kids on the African continent. And this is why we need to start giving. This is a season of giving, you know. You know that song. And I forget who it is that said it. It's not the birds. It may be the Hollies. I'm not sure who. This is the time for the season of loving. And I don't think it's the birds, but it's somebody sang that song. It's the time for the season of loving. It's the time for the season of giving. It really is. This is the giving time. It really is. Yeah, every day is a giving time. We have to start giving. I talked about compassion, I talked about empathy, but another thing, I talked about this earlier in this episode, but another thing is talk about giving. Giving. You know, we don't do enough of that, or at least more of us need to, if you can afford to, of course, because times are difficult and challenging for a great many. But I just want to say that, because I think giving is important, and look, you know, you have all these deals coming. And you wonder, the consumerism is overwhelming, isn't it? I mean, that's what dominates our landscape, consumerism. And not ownership of businesses, not our own businesses, but consumerism. It's driven that we're all chasing and buying and consuming and consuming and consuming, but we need to own, own, and own. our own thing. We need to own our own thing, own our own businesses. We must do that. We've got to. We've really got to do that. And then let's start setting a path for ourselves and not rely on other people. So you heard Nina Simone, you know, young, gifted and black. There's a world waiting for you out here. You got, and that's part of the lyrics. There's a world waiting for you. You need to get out here, dear listener, and you need to reclaim your soul, yourself, and your horizons, and your forward-thinking plans, and you need to start moving and building, because time isn't waiting for you, or me, or us. We have to do this for ourselves. And as much as James Brown, by the way, talked about getting an education, and, you know, all those kinds of things, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, and all the things that he said in that song, Nina Simone was the one who, I think, really emphasized blackness and pride in being black and black pride. I think that's very important to say, because I think a lot of people overlook Nina Simone, and Nina Simone, in my view, just did not ever, and still hasn't in her transition to ancestordom, still has not received the praise and credit that I think she is due and long due, you know, because I think that she is someone who absolutely affirmed blackness in music. I mean, there are other people who did, but not to the level of a Nina Simone. Nina Simone was one of the high priestesses of blackness, and she's called the high priestess of soul. I think she's the high priestess of blackness. I really do. Nina Simone was one of the most African-centered human beings I can think of, one of the most African-centered black people I can think of. I really, in terms of in music and things, and maybe in anything, but particularly in music, in the United States at least, I cannot think of too many others. I mean, there are other people, but not to the level, as I said, of Nina Simone, which is one of the reasons why I played Young, Gifted, and Black there for a few moments, and because I really think that Nina Simone offered a great positivity. She told black people in the 60s and in the 70s, it's okay to be black. It's not just okay, it's you should be strutting your stuff with that. And that came about with the 1970s Black is Beautiful movement, maybe just before the 1970s came along. But there's no doubt that once we got to the 1960s and into the 1970s, Black is Beautiful was a movement, and it was real. I mean, you have Black Lives Matter now. So we've gone from that to, you know, from Black is Beautiful. And Black is Beautiful was a thing people flaunted back in the day. People flaunted that. And great. That's a great thing. It's a marvelously lovely thing. Be positive about yourself and revel in your blackness, because it's important to. In a vicious, racist, cruel-ass, white-dominated world, I think that a black person should absolutely exude confidence in themselves, confidence in being black, and be proud of yourself. It's like James Brown did say it loud, I'm black. I keep saying back. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. That was a big hit song back in the day. But again, Young, Gifted, and Black. To be young, gifted, and black. That is a tremendous song. And it resonates still in this day and age. So Nina, who was one of the great musicians, an excellent musician. I use the word great and I kind of cringe because I don't like the word great, as you know, dear listener, if you listen regularly. I like words that are less finite and more expansive. The excellence, I should say, of Nina Simone, personified in her personal training. She's been personally and classically trained by piano. She was self-taught, I think. And, you know, died of a broken heart, was exiled to Paris. All the racism and the misogynoir that she faced, the misogyny she faced, all of the abuse, all the other things that went on. And there's a great documentary about her directed by... Oh, I forgot her name now. Liz is her first name, and I forgot. No, Garbus is her last, Garbus. And it's called What Happened, Miss Simone? What Happened, Miss Simone? Simone. You have to watch that. It may be around on one of these streaming platforms somewhere. You have to watch the documentary. And Nina Simone is marvelous. And the high priestess of blackness endures. She endures. Even though she's no longer with us here, Nina endures. And just, you've got to get her albums. You've got to get your hands on all her music. She did a lot of covers back in the day. She wrote and produced and wrote her own music and performed it. Again, a classically trained musician, piano, and all kinds of things. Nina Simone, an absolute gem of a performer and an activist, very much in the civil rights and human rights movement in the 60s into the 70s. She's very much an activist, lent her name to a lot of causes, emphasized civil rights, voting rights, human rights. I mean, Nina Simone was the real deal. I mean, James Brown didn't necessarily do all of that, but Nina Simone did. And it's not about pitting one against another. It's just about who gets the credit in this world and who doesn't. And I think that Nina Simone deserves much more credit than I think she's ever been given. So there we go. That's a bit of a, not exactly a detour, but just something to think about here. But I want to get back to this whole notion, dear listener, and thank you for your patience. About film and what films you've been watching in the last few days and the last few weeks even. And, you know, as we are now in this holiday season, all across the world, there's a kind of hush all over the world tonight. That is, to my recollection, the Carpenters who did that song. And maybe it's been covered by others and maybe the Carpenters covered it too. I don't remember if Karen and... is it Richard Carpenter? Karen and Richard wrote that song or not. I don't remember. But they did do that song. There's a kind. So wherever you are in the world, this is holiday season time. It really is. Whether you observe these holidays or not, you know, the holiday season is upon us. And that means for the next, 4 or 5 weeks, roughly 4 weeks, let's just make it 5 because we go into the new year of Kwanzaa, which ends on January 2nd. So for the next 5 weeks, we are going to have the holiday season here. I don't know if you're someone who gives gifts, buys gifts, and all the rest of it. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Maybe you can afford to, dear listener, maybe you can't. But the point is that these next 5 weeks are going to be a bombardment of ads, of offers, and this, and Cyber Monday, and, you know, White Friday, and this, that Friday, and just another Manic Monday. And you're going to have a blizzard. Of all of this stuff. It is overwhelming. The consumerism part is overwhelming, don't you think, Nespa, dear listener? There's a lot going on. And everyone's competing for your eyeballs. And they're competing for your wallet. They're competing for your pocketbook. And are you going to yield to them? Or are you going to say, nope, I don't need that. It's just another thing that I'm picking up here. Another thing to buy. I mean, I'll buy it for someone else, buy it for a family member, I'll buy it for my spouse, I'll buy it for my, you know, long-lost cousin that I met 17 years ago, I'll buy it for someone at work or a friend or this or that, but not for me. I don't know, that may be your thinking, dear listener, I don't know. But the point I'm trying to make now is film. What movies have you been watching lately? What movies did you watch yesterday on Thanksgiving Day in the US, if you were here in the US, or if you're wherever you are in the world? What movies have you seen lately that have tickled your fancy? And or even if they haven't tickled your fancy, even if you've just been like, what a waste of crap. Couldn't you make more constructive crap rather than wasteful crap? I mean, whatever your read is on the movies that you have been watching over these last few days, and, you know, yesterday perhaps you may have watched some, but wherever you are in the world, whenever you are in the world, if you will, what movies have you liked that you said, yeah, I'll have a go at that again? Or the movies that you saw and thought, bloody hell, what sucker gave that dude, because it's usually a dude, right, that dude money to make this piece of filth that I've just sat here for 2 hours and 11 and a half minutes watching, excluding trailers. What is that? But, you know, there we go. I mean, this is what happens. There's so much out there. There's remakes, and I'll tell you, here's one I will tell you about, which I have no intention of seeing. And that is West Side Story, as remade by Steven Spielberg. I have no intention of watching it. No, 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 no. I'm not watching West Side Story. Are you? Are you going to watch a remake of West Side Story? The movie that was very famous back in the 1960s, I believe. Rita Moreno and company. You know, the Jets and the Sharks and the whole nine yards and the rest of it. Are you going to want, and Rita Moreno, by the way, makes a cameo of appearance in this new edition of the movie. Are you going to watch that? Are you going to really watch West Side Story Part 2? You know, the remake. Are you really going to watch? Forgive the voice. Are you going to watch that? Oh, God, you can't, can you? I mean, you can do whatever the heck you want, dear listener. Oh, but my time is too precious. Ew, he says, with a look down his nose. My time is too precious to be watching anything like West Side Story as done by Steven Spielberg. I mean, again, I didn't even love the original movie. I mean, I thought that movie was, there's some things about that movie that were, quite frankly, in my view, racist. And Rita Moreno now in a movie after what she said about In the Heights and how, oh, black people complaining about In the Heights. She got on Stephen Colbert during the summer and talked about this. Oh my gosh, why does it have to be about race? Why does it have to be about, this is a Latina talking about, oh, why does it have to be about race? Can you just give it a break for a while? No, we can't give it a break, Miss Moreno, because the white power structure is not giving us a friggin' break. It is continuously oppressing us, and it's also oppressing Latinos. Not that you care. So no, we're not giving anything a break or a rest, you privileged person, you. you rich, privileged person, you. It's a really decidedly privileged thing to say, and quite frankly, racist thing to say, to tell black folk to give it a rest. What is the it? When we want an end to oppression, now that's give it a rest. So you now have become a de facto oppressor then. Oh, don't bother us because our movie needs to be sold and seen all over the place. We don't want you to be complaining about racism now and colorism in the movie. We don't want you to be complaining about that now. Give it a rest. Oh, really? Oh, please. Again, just for your little movie. This is what I'm talking about. There's all kinds of things like this, right? It's all about pitting groups against each other, making ignorant ass and racist statements about somebody's right to protest what is certainly viewed as a racist or a colorist movie. And as In the Heights is with Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote it, John Chu, an Asian gentleman who also directed Crazy Rich Asians. He also directed In the Heights. And listen, when you go to Washington Heights in New York City, you tell me what the population up there in Washington Heights looks like. It certainly doesn't look like what we see in the Heights. At least not most of it. It's just, but again, you know, oh, but don't complain. No, we should. This is what we need to be doing. And these Hollywood films need to depict more real-life characters and not some lying, fake landscape that doesn't exist or is absolutely blown out of proportion. So, look, I'm editorializing now about West Side Story and specifically now In the Heights, which I know some people really liked, but, you know, oh, dearie me. But what movies have you seen lately, dear listener? There's so much out here. Dune, as I said, and King Richard, and I mentioned West Side Story, the remake from Steven Spielberg that's coming. There's so much coming. There's the new Matrix movie that's on the way, the Matrix, I believe it's called The Matrix Resurrections. There's been The Matrix Reloaded, and then The Matrix Revolutions, and now Matrix Resurrection. So you get the idea, the next R, you know, Matrix Reloaded, Revolutions, Resurrection. You get the idea, right? So that's coming. Oh, and some of that shot here in San Francisco, or at least it's set in San Francisco in part. It's got this interesting twist to it. Grace Slick, you know, from obviously from Jefferson Airplane and The White Rabbit. It's interesting because Grace Slick, as I know, or I know she still lives there or not, but she did live at one time in Mill Valley, which is roughly half an hour, if less than that, north of San Francisco. You drive on the Golden Gate Bridge and you head north up the 101 on the Golden Gate Bridge knob, and you're within about 30 minutes or so, you're in Mill Valley. And I think Grace Slick, who of course was the lead singer on Jefferson Airplane back in the day, with the one of the most famous songs she did, is of course, is White Rabbit, as I've just mentioned. And you're within half an hour or so from San Francisco, well, half hour to 45 minutes, you're in Mill Valley. And I think she had a house there. She may still live up there, which is not far away from here, north of here. But the point I'm making about Grace Slick is the Matrix Resurrections, or the Matrix Resurrection, is coming sometime next month. I think it's near Christmas time. And the trailer has the Grace Slick song White Rabbit in it. And as I said, this new Matrix film, which stars Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss and a number of others, takes place, at least part of it takes place in San Francisco. I don't know if it was for a fact shot here. Probably was shot in Los Angeles on a sound lot, and then they did the CGI and the rest of it, because there's a lot of San Francisco skyline and things like that in here. So, but it's certainly set in San Francisco. And so I just find it interesting, the local connection there with Grace Slick and the use of the song White Rabbit, and the fact that she was at one time and may still be in Mill Valley, which is not far north of San Francisco, not far north at all. And also, the same song from Grace Slick, White Rabbit, was also used in another film that was actually shot and based in San Francisco. And it was the film The Game. Do you remember The Game? The film that was directed by David Fincher in 1997, at least it was released then, Sean Penn and Michael Douglas. And Sean Penn is someone who did have a home in the, I don't know, it might have been the Mill Valley area. It might have been the same area. He definitely has a home in Malibu. And Sean Penn has homes in a load of places, I suspect. But Michael Douglas and Sean Penn were in The Game. And there's a moment, and again, that movie was set in San Francisco and shot there too. In fact, some of the areas it was shot in are not far from here. And I like to sometimes go by those locations and just see them, and it's like, wow, see how they did to that location, what they did? One of the things I must say, and of course, when you live in a certain city, a certain place, and you know that films have been shot there, you kind of develop a big, I don't know, not a big ego necessarily, but you just kind of puff your chest out a little bit and go, yeah, this city filmed films like Vertigo and Bullet. You know what I mean? Or films like The Lineup. Or films like, you know, The Game. Or films like Mrs. Doubtfire. Or The Rock. You know? Come on now. Or the films like The Pursuit of Happiness. I could go on and on, dear listener. There's been a gazillion films shot here or set here in San Francisco. And a few of them good. As Danny DeVito would say in the film The War of the Roses. There's been a lot of, even Basic Instinct was shot here, for goodness sake. And Basic Instinct ain't a great movie. I mean, yes, it was pumped up in the 90s when it came out in 1992. And Michael Douglas, again, I've mentioned his name at least once before in the last 5 minutes. And, you know, Michael Douglas with Sharon Stone and, you know, Gene Triplehorn and Basic Instinct, you know. The music was really good in that movie, though. I know the infamous, not the infamous necessarily, it was made that way. You know, Sharon Stone and her legs crossing and uncrossing, and, you know, the camera shot up her crotch, and, you know, all that kind of stuff that was going on, and, you know, the misogynistic tenor of that film. I mean, it was just, and quite frankly, the anti-gay tenor of that film, and it's just disgusting. And then didn't stop the movie from making hundreds of millions of dollars. This is what I said about Netflix earlier and Dave Chappelle. It didn't stop people watching. People are still going to watch Dave Chappelle, and they're still going to watch Netflix. They're not going to care. Oh well, I'm pro gay rights. I'm pro trans, and I'm trans lives matter and pro trans. And then they go and watch filth, flan filth, as a certain someone used to say, and. You know, the hypocrisy is just smitten all over us. But at least people can be honest about that. I'm not going to condemn you. I condemn Netflix for trying to seduce me. I mean, I shouldn't be making jokes about any of this because it's not funny. It's not funny, you know. But anyway, I go on about San Francisco in the movies and how this city's been represented. Goodness gracious, here's another one. The last black man in San Francisco. Do you know how many black men there are in San Francisco? It's about two. I'm one of them. But, you know, we're trying to hold it down here. But the last black man in San Francisco, set and shot here in San Francisco. A lovely movie. What a beautiful movie that was. Oh, yeah. So, look, there's more than... I've just mentioned only a small sample size, dear listener. There's more than enough to feast and ogle all your eyes on in San Francisco. And certainly at the movies here. It's smashing stuff. It really is smashing. Absolutely lovely. This city, the way it's shot sometimes in some of these films, it's just priceless. So, yeah, you know, some of the movies that even make use of San Francisco in a really good way aren't great movies. Like Basic Instincts is another one. There's some really nice shots of San Francisco in Basic Instinct. But again, the movie to me is just is pathetic. I mean, the only good thing about the movie, in my view, are A, the shots of San Francisco, and B, and the views up north when they're driving across the Golden Gate Bridge, or rather they're driving in through Stinson Beach, and which is a little north of San Francisco, and driving around. I mean, the views are really scenic, and Carmel, which is south of San Francisco by about 2.5-3 hours, it's beautiful. It's really nice. I mean, and then the score by Jerry Goldsmith, which I think is lovely. A lovely score. Lovely score. So, you know, there you go. Here's another one that I forget. San Francisco. Here's another really good San Francisco movie. Medicine for Melancholy. Medicine for Melancholy by Barry Jenkins, who, of course, is an Oscar-winning Barry Jenkins as well. He directed such films as Moonlight. He won Best Picture for that. I think the first... or second black man to win a Best Picture award as a producer for a film. I don't think that's happened too many times, only twice. Steve McQueen was one of the persons who did, and I think Barry Jenkins was the other. But the point is that film, too, is set in San Francisco, shot in San Francisco, in black and white. It's a beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. And so there we go. You know, there's lots of movies that have been shot here, and look really good, really, really, really good indeed. And though, by the way, The Conversation, Harrison Ford, 1971 or 72, I think it was 72 or 3, well, 74 even. The Conversation, Francis Ford Coppola. Actually, it would have been probably earlier than 74 because The Godfather Part 2 was 1974, if memory serves. So it may have been 71 for The Conversation. I'm doing this all off the top of my head, dear listener, so please excuse me. So The Conversation, another shot is set. The opening shot is in Union Square when I think Harrison Ford is walking through Union Square, the shopping center that I talked to you about a few episodes ago that had all these robberies in it, you know, Louis Vuitton being robbed in broad night light, when you had a guy with armfuls of stuff not being arrested as far as I know. And then the cops of San Francisco, you know, smashing the crap out of this car and dragging out the occupant that was in. But by then the damage had been done. And anyway, but yeah, there's the opening shot of The Conversation, which is it's a harrowing movie. I think Gene Hackman, I think, is in it. Harrison Ford is in it. And Francis Ford Coppola, who is a local filmmaker and has his dig still here in San Francisco. He has a little film and bar enterprise, I think. I forgot what it's called now. Here in San Francisco in North Beach. And he has a winery, which I think he's sold now, the winery up north, north of San Francisco, in the wine country in Napa. But I have to say, that's another arresting film. So I could go on and on about San Francisco movies, but I want to find out about the movies you're watching. What movies you're watching? I just remembered another one, Zodiac, by David Fincher again. David Fincher. David Fincher, who lives, again, he lives also north of San Francisco, or at least I think he has a home north of San Francisco. And I think it may be Mill Valley as well. David Fincher, who brought us Panic Room, and I think that may have been set in San Francisco also. But I definitely know that Zodiac was obviously shot and set in San Francisco, because Zodiac, of course, took place. There was a Zodiac killing that happened here in San Francisco in 1969. And I think if you may remember that, dear listener, if you are of a certain age, in a street not all that far from here, where at night a cab driver was murdered, was shot and killed by the Zodiac, or someone who claimed to be or was the Zodiac killer. And the police were oh so close to catching him. And the police apparently just let him go, or he slipped through their hands, so to speak, in quotes, slipped through their hands, right? Oh, we didn't check him, you know, it was dark, we saw somebody, we didn't know he was covered in blood, we couldn't tell because it's dark. And that was the crazy thing, is that he had blood all over him. And apparently they saw a guy skulking away across the street, and the police did not ever stop him. That's just incredible. And he's never been caught. The case is still unsolved. It's a cold case. And San Francisco, I think they still have the books open on that case. And you've got to see Zodiac. Zodiac is I think it's David Fincher's best film. I think it's an outstanding film. I really do. I love the procedure of that movie. It stars Robert De Niro, Jake Gyllenhaal, Mark Ruffalo, and a number of other people. It was a really good cast of people in there. And goodness gracious me. So I can go on and on about San Francisco movies and movies shot here. But again, what movies tickled your fancy? What movies have you watched this year? It doesn't even just have to be the last day or two. And it doesn't have to be in the last week or two. It could just be any time in 2021. And the movie doesn't have to be from or released in 2021. The movie could have been 1935. The movie could have been 1941. The movie could have been 1961, 51, 31, 21. It could have been any of those years. So, but what is it that has entertained you and really tickled your fancy? And what hasn't in a film in 2021, or what hasn't during the last few weeks? You want to relax, you want to entertain yourself, you don't want to really read anything, you're not in the mood to read, you're not in the mood to listen to any music, as lovely as music is. You just want to kick your feet up and watch a good movie and see where that gets you to, where that takes you on your holiday and on your day off, on your days off. And your weekend, and you're going, hey, you know, I want to watch this. And then you watch it and go, bloody hell, that was a blooming waste of time. Who gave that bozo the money to waste? And then you watch others and go, wow, that was it. Oh my gosh, it's another movie that's set in San Francisco. Guess who's coming to dinner? Sidney Poitier and Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. That was set in San Francisco. Some of that was shot in San Francisco. Oh, there's another movie set in San Francisco. Days of Wine and Roses, the Blake Edwards-directed film. Lee Remick, I think it was, and Jack Lemmon. Oh, my gosh. So there you go, another one. And that was a black and white movie. Oh, man, I tell you, there's so many movies. And that was a really dour movie. But excellent performances from Lee Remick and Jack Lemmon. Fantastic performances, knockout. And Blake Edwards, who was known as this very comedic director, you know, he directed films like Ten and Arthur. Good Lord, man. Did he direct Arthur? I think he did. I think he may have done. But I tell you, he directed Ten, he directed this, he did Pink Panther movies, the rest of it, blah, blah, blah. But my God, he absolutely, with Days of Wine and Roses, which is back, I think, in the either late 1950s or early 1960s, he directed a really good film there. God, those performances. About two alcoholics, so that gives you an idea of how freaking depressing the movie is. dour. It's such a, it is very good. It's a good movie. So anyway, there you go, dear listener. What movies? I mean, for me, I think some of the movies I've even just mentioned there are movies that, while I may not have seen them lately, these are movies that I've actually really developed an affinity for. Films like Days of Wine and Roses, even though, again, it's a fairly dour movie. But look, there are plenty of dour movies that are very well done and very good, even though they may not inspire feelings of joy in you. They are very good. Zodiac's another one that's fairly dour in some ways, but I think it's a fantastic film. I really like the procedural effect of that movie and how someone like a David Fincher is so clinical and gets involved in the procedural conundrums that come about investigating a case like the Zodiac Killer case, which, you know, this guy was a serial killer and he never was caught after all these years. The rampage began in the late 60s, went into the, I think, early to mid-1970s. He was never caught. Never, ever, 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 ever. And the speculation is that he actually has died, I would imagine, since. But never caught. San Francisco police never caught him. There were all these other surrounding areas in the Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, where they never got him. And he killed a number of people over a number of years. He even taunted the San Francisco Chronicle and other press outlets, and he tricked them, and he did all kinds of stuff, and ran circles around the San Francisco Police Department, SFPD, and a number of others. He totally hamstrung them, and he got away with it, damn it. You know, so there's not this happy ending after 2 hours, oh, we can find the bad guy and lock him up. No, that didn't happen, and I like the way that David Fincher explored the procedural conundrums and difficulties and all other kinds of things and interesting, intriguing things and gray areas of Zodiac. It was phenomenally done. And there's some books by Robert Graysmith, who actually was the cartoonist in the San Francisco Chronicle at the time, back in the 60s and 70s. And he wrote two books, at least two books, on Zodiac. And I think the film that David Fincher did was based on one or two of those books. I think one of the first one's called Zodiac, the next one's called, second one's called Zodiac Unmasked. You have to read those. These are fascinating books. And the detail. This is the cartoonist at the San Francisco Chronicle, dear listener. But he was so immersed in the case. So immersed. And that shown, Jake Gyllenhaal plays the Robert Graysmith character. I actually got to meet Robert Graysmith. I had to interview him. God, must be almost 20 years ago now. When Zodiac came out, actually Zodiac came out in 2007, so it's less than that, it's about 13, 14 years ago. Got to interview him. He's a fascinating figure, a little quirky, but still a fascinating figure. And he talked about his involvement in the case, and there was all kind of speculation around him. Is he the Zodiac? It's like, nah, that's just nonsense. But fascinating figure. So anyway, again, it's kind of like a chorus. What movies have you watched, dear listener? You know, what movies? You know, I enjoy Bullet, another San Francisco film. It doesn't have to be about San Francisco. I'm just saying it because I just want to promote San Francisco a bit. In these times where tourists are fleeing this freaking city, you know, San Francisco now, I mean, it's like a ghost town. People do not want to come here because of the rising crime. And the crime's been going up in a load of cities across the country. Let's be honest, let's have it right. And it's also true of other countries where crime is increasing. With this pandemic that continues on, there's all kinds of things, and people get desperate. This is silly season too, you know. It's not just holiday season, it's silly season. So crime is up. But I wanted to just say that it's just incredible, these movies that we see these days. And I don't know. Do you think your time has been wasted by any of the ones you've seen, or was it time well spent for you? I know. I will leave you with that for now, but then I'm going to come right back in just a moment. We'll be right back.
San Francisco, a Quinn Martin production, starring Carl Malden, also starring Michael Douglas.
Those were the days, dear listener. Welcome back. The Streets of San Francisco, the opening credits for that great Quinn Martin production, or I should say that really superb Quinn Martin production. And Quinn Martin, goodness gracious, did a gazillion TV series. And that was one of them in the 1970s, the early to mid-1970s. The Streets of San Francisco, that was a television series that ran, I think, from 71 or 72 through the mid-1970s. I remember that series well. I loved it. That's when I was a big fan of Michael Douglas. That's when I really became a big fan of his, because I just remember him from that series. It's one of the times that I really, first times I really was exposed to him. Now, he had done, in 1900 and I think it was 1972 or 3, he produced, I should say, the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was, of course, a film that came out around that time. I think it's 72, 73, 74. A movie that, phenomenally powerful movie and a very sad movie. You don't talk about a dour movie. Jack Nicholson winning the Oscar for that, Best Actor, for his role as McMurphy, you know, in a mental facility, institution, Phyllis facility. And the other actor, whose name I forget now, who was so memorable as well, in that film, which, of course, is based on the novel by Ken Kesey, and Michael Douglas was the producer. Michael Douglas was 28 or 29 years old at the time he produced that, and he was one of the youngest producers to win a Best Picture Oscar. And I think that was really the jump for him, and then he really launched himself into a film career and a TV career as well. And so the TV career was starting just before he won the Oscar, and then that blossomed into a film career where he starred in such films as Coma and The China Syndrome. He was acting alongside the likes of Jack Lemmon, and I think Jane Fonda were in that movie, if the memory serves me correct, and Genevieve Bujold in a film called Coma, which came out in the late 1970s. And then he went on and on from strength to strength from there, and then he came into the 1980s, and he got to films, of course, then. And I've talked about these ad infinitum, when he did films like Jewel in the Crown, Romancing the Stone, which came first, and, you know, there we go. So anyway, you know, that's the story there with Mr. Douglas and with the San Francisco and the rest of it. I'll be right back. Welcome back again, dear listener. So, you know, I got to stop myself before I just keep talking about everything San Francisco movie-wise. There are other cities across this planet where movies have been shot or set and have been really impactful. You know, New York, I mean, my goodness, New York is undoubtedly the city in the world that has had more films than any other in history shot there or set there. And of course, nowadays, New York is very, very expensive to film in, so that people end up, the movie crews now end up going to Vancouver or Toronto, and they get tax credits up in Canada, and they shoot the movies there and pretend that they are shooting in New York or in LA. But anyway, look, please let me know. Drop me a line if you would like to. You don't have to, of course. But drop me a line if you wish. Tell me what movies have tickled your fancy in 2021, or what you've been watching over the first 24 hours or so of the official holiday season. You know, what movies have you liked? What movies haven't you liked? You know, just interested in finding out where you stand on that, dear listener. And I'm going to call it an episode here. And I'm going to leave you with the theme that, of course, I've been playing earlier, that I'm going to play again. It's The Streets of San Francisco, the opening credits, and I think the closing credits too here. So I hope that you enjoy this, and I hope that you enjoy your holiday weekend here in the United States. And wherever you are, whether it's a holiday for you or not, I hope you enjoy the next few weeks, and be well and be safe. Please be well and take care, won't you? Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I am Omar Moore. Thank you, Patrick Williams. Really appreciate your theme music.